Shalom. Welcome to Ash JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Harav Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our questions from our great fellow JTFers, and there are many questions this week, I want to speak about what happened on Facebook. The radical left decided to target four right-wing Facebook pages. Our page was one of those four pages. And I want our members to know the background to this story. The radical left in Israel organized a group that would complain to Facebook, that started complaining to Facebook and demanding that these four pages be taken down. Why? Because they claim that these four pages are racist, that they support terrorism, and all of the types of charges that they're inciting people, all of the types of charges which are completely bogus and phony. But that's the claim they made to Facebook. The head of this group, the person who initiated this, is an Israeli Jew named Harel Pick. Harel Pick is a graduate student at Hebrew University. He is an open supporter of Arab Knesset members like Hanin Zuabi, who call for the destruction of Israel. Hanin Zuabi supports the destruction of Israel openly. Hanin Zuabi supports the Hamas terrorist mass murderers. And so Harel Pick supports Arab Knesset members who want to destroy his people. He supports those that want to destroy his own people. That is the sick, self-hating, radical left in Israel. That's the way the radical left thinks in Israel. And this is these are the incredibly sick people that we're dealing with when we speak about the extreme left in Israel. Now, they decided they're going to target four Facebook pages. All four Facebook pages call themselves Kahanist. And we are one of those four Facebook pages. Three out of the four are part of a group in Israel that was actually against us, that for years was criticizing us, that viewed us as competition. I don't know why. We wanted to cooperate. We wanted to work together. We always wanted to work together. And I sent them tens of thousands of dollars. I raised tens of thousands of dollars for Baruch Marzel when he was running for the Knesset, for instance. So we wanted to work together. We wanted cooperation. But they viewed us as competition, and they ended up attacking us and condemning us and trying to make themselves look like they're moderate in comparison to us so that they could get better articles and better review in the Israeli news media. In any event, it was very unfortunate. We had to respond to the attacks, and there was this back and forth situation here which we always wanted to avoid, which we never wanted to have any part of, but I think people on our forum who were around at that time a couple of years ago remember when all of this happened. Now, it's important to remember this because I want you to know how we reacted when they were in trouble now. When I couldn't get into Israel, instead of helping me get into Israel, they said, oh, he could go to Israel anytime he wants. He just claims he's banned from Israel. And I proved. I had letters proving that I'm banned from Israel. And I have, right now, I have proof, documentary proof, that right now members of the Knesset are intervening on my behalf to get me into Israel, and I'm still banned from going to Israel. But they claimed, oh, Chaim ben Pesach just says that he can't go. He could go to Israel anytime. I proved through videos that that was not true, that it was completely false. And I think people will remember that period of time. It was a sad period of time, because we had to respond and we had to hit back. And it ended up hurting their campaign. When they ran for the Knesset, it ended up hurting them, and they wound up losing running for the Knesset. And I think one of the reasons they lost is because people did not appreciate the fact that they were attacking their fellow Kahanists. In any event, that was then. We came under fire together with them, all four of us, from the radical left this past week. The radical left had an organized, concerted campaign of hundreds of people writing to Facebook urging that our pages be taken down. Ironically, this is really an incredibly ironic story, and it shows you how strange things can turn out in the end. Ironically, even though our page is more right-wing than their three pages, our page is more uncompromising and more right-wing and certainly more Kahanist than their three pages ever were. But because we're very careful on Facebook, and because we use careful language, even though we take uncompromising positions, we don't compromise on any of our principles, but we express it with language that's very careful on Facebook because we know what we're dealing with. Because we were very careful with our language, our page was not taken down, and Facebook rejected their claims and rejected their complaints and said, we're not going to take the page of Hayamin HaMiti, Koach Mesima Yehudi, which is the Jewish task force in Hebrew, we're not taking that page down. They rejected all the complaints, threw them all out, and said, no, we're not taking their page down. We don't see anything. They responded and said, we don't see anything on their page that warrants taking their page down. So we survived all of this because we're very careful about what we write. We're very careful about the language we use, even though our positions, if you check off our positions on the issues, whether it's freeing Jewish prisoners who were arrested for fighting for the Jewish people, or whether it's the land of Israel, or whether it's our opposition to the Israeli news media, or whether it's our view on the fact that we have to encourage the Arabs to leave Israel with compensation, on issue after issue, we're more right-wing than they are. And yet, our page was untouched, and Facebook said, we're not taking the page down. There's nothing wrong with the page. We're not taking their page down. But the page of these other three groups, who wanted to portray themselves in the media as more moderate than we are, their pages were taken down because they actually used much stronger language on their pages. In order to attract more members, they used stronger language and stronger rhetoric. And because of that rhetoric and that language, Facebook decided to remove their pages. So it's ironic. We're more right-wing, but we watched how we express ourselves, how we express our right-wing views. Whereas they are less right-wing and they compromise on their principles. But they did it in a more bombastic way, and so they wound up getting their pages taken down. One of the reasons why we're so cautious on our Facebook pages, and why we've been very cautious and very careful to do everything within the bounds of Facebook rules, is because we remember in 2007 what happened to us on YouTube. On YouTube, all of our accounts on YouTube, if you recall, those of us that were in JTF in 2007 certainly remember this. All of our accounts on YouTube were taken down by YouTube. So we remembered that experience. Now, of course, since then, we're stronger than ever on YouTube. So in the long term, it didn't hurt us. It actually helped us because people resented the fact that we were taken down. We ended up getting more contributions and more support. And if you look at YouTube today, our presence is much bigger on YouTube today than it was then. Much bigger. We have far more views, far more videos, far more YouTube accounts. We're much stronger on YouTube than ever before. But in any event, we nevertheless, from YouTube, we learned how to use certain types of language that would not violate any rules, to make sure that we're not violating any rules. And so we didn't violate the Facebook rules. And so their three accounts were taken down. Our account, the fourth account that was targeted, was not taken down. Baruch Hashem, thank God that we weren't taken down. But we're not happy that they were taken down, even though they attacked me and criticized me and said things that weren't true about me. I'm not happy when my fellow Jews, especially my fellow Kahanist Jews, suffer. I'm not happy about that. And so we defended them when they were taken down. And they put up new pages. They put up new pages on Facebook to replace the old ones. And they're doing very well. I mean, the new pages that they put up are doing very well. They're getting their likes back. They're getting it all back. And in the long run, they'll probably be even stronger as a result of this experience. This is not going to defeat them. They have their backup. They got, you know, one of them got 10,000 likes in 24 hours. The other one got 7,000, I think, in 24 hours or 36 hours. So they're getting likes at a much faster pace now than ever before, because people resent the fact that there's an attempt here to censor views. When you have Hamas and Hezbollah and Muslim terrorists on Facebook, when you have Nazis on Facebook, when you have the worst anti-Semites on Facebook, they're allowed to have Facebook pages, and their pages aren't taken down, but right-wing Jews who want to defend Israel, who love the Jewish people, are targeted. A lot of people resented that. It backfired, and it's going to backfire on the left, that these pages were taken down. And we already see, they already put up new pages, and their new pages are doing better than the old ones. But one of the reasons their new pages are doing so well is because we promoted their new pages. Now, you may say, Chaim, what a sucker you are. They said bad things about you. They attacked you. They criticized you. Why are you doing this? Why are you helping them again? And the answer is because I'm not going to let the radical left win. And in addition to that, we're better than that. I'm not going to let even the bad things that they did in the past, I won't let that get in the way. They were hurt. They were damaged here. They were in trouble. And we decided to do the noble thing, and we decided to promote them. We decided to help them. We defended them. We risked our own page defending them, because, you know, when you defend a page that's been taken down, the YouTube management sees what we're doing, and they were paying close attention to everything we're doing because of all the complaints that they got from the radical left. You know, we risked everything, but we defended them. We promoted their new pages. And, you know, they really, one of the leaders who criticized me terribly, he thanked me very profusely. And he was actually quite moved by the fact that, you know, that despite everything that happened in the past, we immediately came to their help, came to their assistance. And we immediately showed that when there's trouble, where we stand and what we're willing to do, that if there's a crisis, there's an emergency, when we're under attack, that we want to close ranks, that we should work together. And I think they actually were impressed by that. Hopefully that will mean an end to the terrible, petty, personal attacks that took place, and the feeling that I'm, you know, some sort of competition for them, so they have to tear me down. I hope that they'll realize now, I don't want to tear them down. I don't want them tearing us down. I want all good Jews to succeed. And if they do good things for the Jewish people and succeed, wonderful. That's always been our attitude. And I think they saw that this week. In any event, we were not taken down, and Facebook rejected the claims against us because, again, our page, the language on our page, on our Hebrew page, is much more cautious. Even though if you look at the actual positions we take on the issues, our positions, as I stated before, our positions are actually more right-wing than their positions. But the language we used and how we expressed ourselves, it was done in a way that doesn't violate, that you can't interpret as violating Facebook rules. And so Facebook rejected their claims, and Facebook said, no, their page will stay. Their page is staying up. So they were unable to take us down. And the three pages that they did take down are back up and doing better than ever. And they brought us together. They brought us together. People who had said terrible things about me, they brought us together. And I don't think, at least I hope not, I don't think they're going to say those terrible things now, because I think they were genuinely, personally moved by the fact that when they were in trouble, they saw what type of Jews we are. And I think that really got to them. I'm talking about these other groups that for jealousy or pettiness or whatever the reasons were, or feeling that we're competing with them, whatever the reasons were, they felt compelled to attack us and put us down. I think now they realize that, I hope at least now they realize that was a terrible mistake, that we could have accomplished so much more together if we worked together. So the radical left didn't succeed. Those three pages are back up. Our page is doing better than ever. Our page was never taken down to begin with and is doing better than ever. And they brought us together. They brought people who were not working together and who were really far apart. They brought us together. Just so that you'll know what happened on Facebook this past week. And you know, as a result, I think it's going to have a very positive effect. But as a result of what happened, we have so many new likes and so many people turn to us that we are now the biggest, we're certainly the biggest Kahanist Facebook page. We're the biggest Kahanist Facebook page. We're certainly the biggest right-wing Hebrew Facebook page. And I'm talking about the real right. I'm not talking about people who call themselves right-wing, who are members of the Knesset, and who call themselves right-wing and then vote for Netanyahu and support Netanyahu and say we should be supporting Netanyahu and the Likud and have ceasefires with Muslim terrorists and support a prime minister who releases thousands of Muslim terrorists, who gives in to Obama's pressure, who says he supports a Palestinian state, because those are Netanyahu's terrible policies. So anyone who supports Netanyahu is not a real right-winger. Anyone who's part of the Likud, that's not right-wing. The Likud is responsible for the vast majority of Israeli surrender of land since the 1967 Six-Day War. The vast majority of land that has been surrendered to our enemies was surrendered not by left-wing governments, but by the Likud, by the phony right. And so if you look at truly independent right-wing Hebrew Facebook pages, we're now the biggest one. We're now the biggest page on Facebook. We had in March of this year, as all of our great members know, because I repeat it every week, and I made a note of it so that we would keep track of where we're going here. Before we started our advertising campaign, we had 1,830 likes or members on our Facebook page in March 2014. 1,830 likes or members, which, you know, is not bad. 1,830 members in a country the size of Israel, not that bad. That was a few months ago in March of this year. Now, we went from 1830 to 23,697 members the last time I checked. 23,697. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And you know something? Our rate of growth on Facebook. Facebook sent me a message saying your rate of growth is faster than the rate of growth of 95% of all advertisers. We're growing at a faster rate than 95% of Facebook advertisers. And Facebook advertisers include many multi-million dollar corporations and companies with big PR firms that do their ads for them. That's most of Facebook's advertising are the big guys, the really big people who can afford big advertising way beyond our meager budget. And in terms of the likes that we're getting, in terms of the members that we're getting per dollar, we're doing better than more than 95% of the advertisers on Facebook. And that includes most of the big corporations and the big politicians and others that advertise. We're doing, per dollar, we're doing better than they are. And I'm speaking about people that spend millions of dollars. I'm speaking about people that represent huge numbers, including Netanyahu. I mean, we get, per dollar, we do better than him in our advertising. Per dollar, we do better than almost all of the Israeli politicians in advertising, or the vast majority of Israeli politicians. We're doing better than them per dollar. Now, they have a lot more money than we have. They have millions of dollars. But if you look at the number of people that join us for every dollar we spend on advertising, we're doing better than them, a lot better. Baruch Hashem that we're doing well. So we're now at 23,697 members. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And we're the biggest Hebrew right-wing Facebook page. We're the biggest now. Imagine, by the way, and this is with us at 23,600 plus. Imagine what we could do. Imagine what we could be if we get to 100,000 members in a country of 6 million Jews. I believe that if we achieve 100,000 members, I think that we can change Jewish history. I think that then we're on our way. to changing Jewish history. And so we have a lot to be proud of. I think we learned some important lessons this week, and I think our people who were attacking us unfairly, they learned some important lessons about us this week. At least one of them apologized to me. Two of them contacted me to tell me how grateful they were that despite the past and despite everything that happened in the past, that we immediately sided with them and backed them up loyally, and we immediately advertised their new Facebook pages when their new Facebook pages were up. They personally called me to thank me. And one of them actually apologized for what happened in the past. And so let's hope that we've turned a new corner here. I don't know if that's true of all of them. I mean, there are still, you know, you still have among their ordinary members, you have some petty people, unfortunately. That's something that we can't cure everything until the Mashiach comes, until the Messiah comes. Everything is not going to be cured. We're not going to have a perfect world. But the situation is better than it was before. And I think we can be very proud. I think you, as JTFers, can be very proud of the fact that you're part of an organization that isn't petty and that loves the Jewish people and that is faithful to its principles. And Baruch Hashem, God protected us this week, Baruch Hashem, and may God continue to protect us, and may we continue to grow from 23,600 plus. We want to keep growing. We want to hit 100,000. And we already saw this week also that if they take a page down, the page can be put back up once again on Facebook. Facebook allows you to put a new page up because the new page hasn't broken any rules. So they allow you to start again and put a new page up. And the new page has a good chance of getting back pretty quickly all of the old likes because people search. And they say, what happened to the page? What's going on here? And they search. So many people come back. We saw this with the three pages that were taken down. They're all coming back at a faster rate than before. So it was good to see that. It was good to see that this past week. Help us. Help us become a mass movement. Don't you want to see an Israel run by people like us? Don't you want to see the Jewish people represented by people like us? Don't you want to see an idealistic people, a principled people, a brave people that stands up for something again, that believes in something? Don't you want to see that happen? Wouldn't this be an infinitely better world if JTF were the leaders of Israel? I know my fellow JTFers want this as badly as anyone, so I'm preaching to the choir. But you can help us. You know, every time someone sends us a contribution, that money enables us automatically to advertise and reach more people. We're automatically reaching more people. We're automatically reaching tens of thousands of new people when we have more money. And a certain number of those people will join. You got to repeat. You got to do repeat advertising like any other commercial, like anyone else. But we get an excellent response compared to all the other advertisers. We're doing very well. Baruch Hashem, thank God. Because our message resonates. Our message sells well to the people of Israel who are desperate for voices of truth for a change. So, you know that when you make a contribution to us, when you support us, your money is going directly to reach Israeli Jews with the truth that they're not going to get anywhere else. Directly to promote a philosophy and ideology that they won't have any hope of getting anywhere else unless we get bigger. And you know that if we become a mass movement, you know what the implications of that are going to be. And so we need your support. Every check, every money order, every cash donation makes a huge difference. A huge difference. Every time you make a contribution, you personally are responsible for reaching Israeli Jews who may not know the facts, who may not know that there's hope out there. You personally are responsible for reaching them with this message of hope and truth and reality. Reality that we're surrounded by Muslim Nazis that want to destroy us and that Israel is fighting for her survival. Reality. Our message is a message of reality. You personally are reaching Jews in Israel with this message. You're changing people's lives. You're waking people up. You're giving people hope. That certainly makes this a better world. And so, you know, people who send us, God bless the people who send us checks and money orders and cash donations to a post office box, and God bless the great JTFers who decide to contribute online with their credit card through PayPal. They go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org. On our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, there's a donate button on top, and in a couple of minutes they can conveniently contribute through PayPal. It doesn't matter if people contribute on the internet through PayPal or if people want to contribute by sending checks and money orders and cash donations to the post office box. Makes no difference at all. Whatever's most convenient, whatever's the easiest for you, whatever you feel most comfortable doing, makes no difference. It's going to reach the people of Israel with the truth. How could anything be better than that? How could anything be more worthy than that? And of course, we need your help with our videos, our Hebrew and English videos, when we upload our Hebrew and English videos on Facebook and on YouTube. Help us promote them, like them, share them, favorite them, comment. Help us with the videos and help us on our forum and help us by putting good posts as well on our Facebook pages. We need your help. Together, we can still make a difference. We can still make this a better world. And please, pray for us. Pray for our success. Your prayers are very important to us. Pray for our success and pray that Israel be protected by Almighty God despite the evil actions of her leaders. Let's pray for Israel and pray for the Jewish soldiers that are putting their lives on the line now to defend the Jewish people. And let's pray for redemption for Israel and for the world. Your prayers are important. All right, now we're going to go to questions. I think that's encouraging. I think what happened this week is encouraging. I think so, at least. Now let's go to questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with... And by the way, I want to apologize for the... If you hear a fan in the background, it's just hot in this room. I can't put the air conditioning... If I put air conditioning on, it makes too much noise. Unfortunately, I got one of these air conditioners. It makes too much noise. I have the fan on. If you hear that in the background, I'm really sorry about that. It's just that it's so hot here. If I do the whole program without the fan, it's just so hot. And I think it affects the quality of the program. If I don't enjoy doing the program, I could do it. I could force myself to do it, of course. But I think the program comes out better, and I think we all enjoy it more. You know, if it's nice and cool, and the fan is good enough for me. I feel nice and cool and comfortable now. So I apologize if you're hearing the sound of the fan in the background. All right, let's start off with the great Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, "One, is Russian conflict in Chechnya win-win situation?" Unquote. Oh, absolutely, because the Russians and the Chechnyans are our enemies. The Russians, of course, are building nuclear bombs for Iran and doing everything they can to destroy Israel and to hurt the West and to hurt America. And the Chechenian Muslims, we know what the Chechenian Muslims stand for. We know what they want to do. So it is a win-win situation, yes. Smash Islam writes, two, comment. Erdogan compares Israel to Hitler, unquote. Well, Erdogan, of course, he's the leader of Muslim terrorist Turkey. He compares Israel to Hitler. He favors destroying Israel, supports Hamas, supports Hezbollah, supports all of those that want to destroy the state of Israel and the Jewish people. And he has the nerve to talk about Hitler? What he supports is the same type of thing that Hitler was supporting. And not only that, he represents Turkey, a country that murdered in cold blood 2 million Armenian men, women, and children. 2 million Armenians were murdered in a Holocaust that Turkey perpetrated against them about 100 years ago. Roughly 100 years ago, there was a Holocaust where Turkey murdered 2 million Armenians. And with that Nazi history of murdering the Armenian people, he has the nerve to compare Israel to Hitler? He compares the victims of Hitler to Hitler? When his country, in fact, provided the inspiration. You know, Hitler said that the Turkish murder of the Armenians is what inspired him to murder the Jews. He saw that Turkey got away with it, so he figured Germany can get away with it. Hitler himself said so, wrote that. So, you know, his comparison is obscene and laughable and absurd beyond words. If anyone is comparable to Hitler, it's him. And Smash Islam writes, Malaysian airplane shot down by Russia, unquote. Well, this is nothing new. You know, you remember when the Russians shot down, I guess people don't remember, it's 1983. Only our older members would remember that. 1983, the Russians shot down the Korean airliner, murdering hundreds of innocent passengers. Now they did the same thing with this airline. This is the type of behavior you can expect from a brutal, totalitarian, KGB-controlled regime. That's what you have in Russia, and so that's the type of behavior we can expect. Thank you, Smash Islam, and we now go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, respond, one, Egypt, Israel won't take Gaza Arabs, they're trapped, unquote. Well, they're not trapped. They can leave. If we take power, they certainly won't be trapped because we're going to get them out of there. We are very humane. We're very humane. We will get them out of there. If we take power, they won't be there anymore. And if they're trapped, if they are there and they feel trapped by the war, they should never have started firing missiles on Israel, electing Hamas, and welcoming terrorists into their homes and their mosques and their schools and their hospitals. When you welcome Hamas terrorists who fire thousands of missiles and dig thousands of tunnels in order to murder as many Jews as they can murder, when you invite them into your homes and your mosques and your schools and you elect them in a democratic election, you elect them as your leaders, you can expect some reaction. They're trapped. If they're trapped, it's their fault. They elected murderers and terrorists as their leaders, and they support the murderers and the terrorists. But being that we're so humane, we don't want them to feel trapped. If we take power, we're going to make arrangements to get them out of there. And we'll even give those that there isn't direct proof of their being connected to terrorists, we'll even give them compensation to leave. So, if we take power, that issue will be solved. And when the Arabs are out of Gaza, we're going to go back there, we're going to rebuild Gush Katif, and we're going to rebuild all of Gaza, Jewish Gaza. Gaza is Jewish. It's Jewish land. It's part of the land of Israel. And it will be part of the land of Israel again when, God willing, someday we're in power. And now Dr. Dan writes, too, they're not shields. Gaza is densely populated, unquote. Oh, they're not shields. No, not much. No. They put missiles in schools with little school children. They're not doing that to use the school children as shields. Of course not. They put missiles in hospitals. The UN found missiles in their UN school and returned the missiles over to the Hamas terrorists, by the way. The UN found Hamas missiles in their UN schools. They're not doing that to use them as shields. No, of course not. Anyway, Gaza's densely populated. They won't be densely populated anymore. If we take power, I agree they're too densely populated. I'm very humanitarian and enlightened. We're going to make sure that they won't be densely populated anymore if we take power. And Dr. Dan now writes, "I rejoice when CNN gets frustrated," unquote. Oh, absolutely. CNN is such an evil, typical example of the Jew-hating Bolshevik media. Absolutely. We agree, Dr. Dan, as usual. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we now go to our great friend Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Why do so many Jews live in Florida?" unquote. I think because a lot of them escaped the cold weather in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago. A lot of them came from the north. And they love the fact that Florida has warm weather. Florida, of course, is very hot in the summertime. I've spent a lot of time in Florida, so I know. I'm very familiar with, especially with the Miami area, Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach. I'm very familiar with those areas. I had a radio show in Florida for 8 years. It was a big rock radio station in Pompano Beach, and we had a program there for 1 hour every Sunday morning with a big audience for 8 years. So I'm very familiar with Florida, and I think that the Jews up north, when they come down and see the warm climate, and also when they see the fact that Florida has no income tax, I think they decide it's better than New York and better than these other places where they live. But I have a better solution for the Jews. Florida is, it's true that Florida has warm climate, but it's also very hot. 6 months out of the year, it's very hot and humid. They can move to the land of Israel, where it's dry. It's warm and dry and beautiful, and they could be in their own homeland. That would be better than Florida for the Jews. Florida is a nice place. It's a nice state, a beautiful state, but not for Jews. God commands the Jews to live in the land of Israel. That's where the Jews belong. Many Jews live in Florida because they'd rather live there than elsewhere, but the best place for Jews to live, of course, is in the land of Israel. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we now go to the great Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you think that the ground offensive is for show and won't last long? Thanks," unquote. I certainly do. I think that there's going to be another ceasefire, and we're going to go through the same thing we went through repeatedly. There's a saying in Hebrew, I've been to this movie before. I've been here before. We've been down this road so many times. The Israeli government is already begging for a ceasefire and already announcing one-sided, unilateral ceasefires. The Israeli government's goal is not victory. The Israeli government is not trying to win. They're not even trying to win. Their goal is another ceasefire with the Hamas terrorists. Does anybody really think that's going to work out? Does anybody really think it will last? I mean, the Hamas terrorists eventually will accept the ceasefire, and then they'll get stronger and rearm, and we'll be back to where we started from, except it'll be even worse next time. Each time it gets worse and worse. This is a government without the backbone to defend its people, and a government that doesn't have the backbone to defend its people is a government that has no legitimacy. This government must go. We must have an Israeli government that will protect Jews and restore full security in the land of Israel. We will do that if we're elected. That we will do. Obama won't like us, and neither will that pig John Kerry. But we will restore security for Jews in the land of Israel. We will not allow dozens of Jewish soldiers to be uselessly murdered. That won't happen. if we take power. We're going to restore security, and it's the enemy that's going to be worried, not us. The enemy is the one that's going to be insecure and on the run if we take power. And that's the obligation of a true Jewish government. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to our great friend DGR81, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, why do you think God has not intervened more forcefully to help JTF with its budget problems, unquote? Because God gives people free will. If God forces people to give us money, they won't get any credit for it. They don't deserve any reward. God wants people out of their own free will to decide. You know something? JTF and JTF reaching Israeli Jews with the truth is important to me. It's just as important to me as everything else that I spend money on in my life. This is also a priority for me, and so I'm going to give JTF financial support. It's important to me. If someone out of their own free will makes that decision, then there's the reward. Then they deserve credit for it. But if God forces them to, then what's the point? People have to give out of their own free will. JTF does not attract very wealthy people. JTF usually attracts middle class people, working class people, and we do have some lawyers, doctors, we have some people, but we don't have super rich people. And so our fellow JTFers help us as much as they can. Let's hope we get bigger, and let's hope we do attract super rich people, and then our budget problems will disappear. But right now, our meager budget is the number one thing standing between us and becoming a mass movement overnight. Almost overnight. We could become a mass movement almost overnight if we had a big budget. Or not even a big budget, a decent budget. A decent sized budget. The number one thing standing in the way are our budget, is our meager budget. And that's a shame. But God gives people free will to either help or not help. People make their choices. And we now go to the great paper cut, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, a two-hour daily show from you. The question is not if, but when. Please pray about it, unquote. Paper cut, I would love to do a two-hour program every day. I would love to do even a longer program than that every day. The problem is, doing a two-hour program means that's basically all you do. To have two interesting hours every day, you got to spend all your time preparing material and getting guests and having everything set up. That's full time. I wouldn't have time to do what we're doing with the Facebook pages and do the other things we're doing to build our movement. I wouldn't have time to do that if I had a two-hour daily program. Yes, I would love to do it. I'd be delighted to do it. But I don't see how I can do that and do the other essential things that we're doing. And we are doing essential things. We're reaching a lot of people. I don't see how I can do both right now. If there was a way, then there was a way to do it successfully. I would be delighted to have a 2-hour program. I would be delighted to take phone calls from our great members and have guests and even have debates on the program. I think I would be delighted to do it. But that's full time. These guys that have programs like that, they have staffs, whole staffs that prepare everything for them so that they could do all of this. I don't have a staff that could do all of this for me. I would have to do all of the footwork and everything else and getting the guests and organizing and preparing everything. I'd have to do it all myself. That would be very hard to do. It wouldn't be easy to do. I know that there are other people who do things like that, but they do it full time. Let's hope, paper cut, let's hope that we come up with ways to reach people continuously and to reach people on a massive scale. And then eventually, God willing, I mean, if we're in power, I want there to be not 2-hour daily program, I want there to be programs all the time. From multiple people, from numerous people, reaching Jews and righteous Gentiles with the truth in Hebrew, in English, and in other languages. I want that to happen. But first, we got to get big. We got to get big and strong and have the resources to do it. Thank you, Papercut. And we now go to the great Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "You have shared affirmative action stories that occurred on New York City subways, buses and subways, the LIRR, and the Greyhound buses. Have you ever traveled on Amtrak? Do you have any affirmative action stories that occurred on an Amtrak train?" Unquote. The only one I could think of, I don't know if I... How do I tell this story without being too graphic here? And I don't even know if it's a... I don't even know how much value the story has, but I remember... Yes, I remember traveling on Amtrak to Philadelphia. And I remember on the train, all of a sudden, this woman decided to relieve herself on the train. We're traveling, and she decided to relieve herself on the train. This is in the 1980s, when I was running JDL. And I was going to, we had a JDL chapter meeting in Philadelphia. And I was on my way to Philadelphia from New York. And this woman, she decided to relieve herself. And surely, and so one of the... one of the Amtrak employees saw it. He wasn't a police officer, though. He couldn't arrest her, but he saw it, and he said, "Why'd you do that? Why are you doing that?" He said, "You're doing this in public." He said, "Why are you doing that?" He said, "As soon as we get to the station, there's a ladies' room. We're only 10 minutes away from the station." And she said, "I can't wait. I ain't gonna wait all that time. You think I'm gonna be waiting another 10 minutes? Another 10 minutes, I'm going to be doing it in my pants. I can't wait no more." So, she couldn't wait anymore, so she did it on the train. Anyway, it's a story. I mean, it's disgusting. I don't know, it's the only thing I could think of, and I almost regret having brought it up now that I brought it up, because it's a pretty disgusting story, but... I remember it happening, and this is in the 1980s. And usually Amtrak is cleaner, and there's less of this than you have in the New York City subway system, for instance. But this was one of those instances where, for some reason, when I'm traveling on these things, these things happen. I don't know why. I just attract these types of people. I have no idea why. I have no idea why. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And we now go to... the great Mensch, who writes, and I quote, "USA led the world in stopping flights to Tel Aviv. Turkey followed. Do you think it came down from Obama as an attempt to pressure and destabilize Israel?" Unquote. I have no doubt, Mensch, that it came from Obama and John Kerry. I have no doubt. All they're doing day and night is trying to rescue Hamas, and they're succeeding. Because Netanyahu is not really going after Hamas the way he should. This is day and night. All they do is try to protect the Muslim terrorists. And they wanted to pressure Israel. They wanted to destroy Israel's economy and pressure Israel and cripple Israel. They want to cripple Israel economically. They know that in the summertime Israel gets a lot of tourists, and that the tourist industry is an important component of Israel's economy. And so they want to cripple Israel's economy. I have no doubt that that's what they intend to do. Of course. Our great friend, Senator Ted Cruz, he really stood up for Israel. He deserves a lot of credit. He was the first one to condemn this, and he's the first one to stand up and say, "You are initiating an economic boycott of Israel. You are now part of the boycott campaign against Israel," he said to Obama and Kerry. And he said, "I'm going to hold up any more State Department appointees in the Senate. I'm going to hold them up from now on. Every State Department appointee that you want to put in some position in the State Department, I'm holding it up now because of this." And he came under a lot of flack from all the anti-Semitic establishment types in Washington. But he stood up for Israel, and I believe that one of the reasons why they ended this boycott of Israel, one of the reasons why they They got the FAA to lift this airline boycott of Israel was because of Ted Cruz. I think he really galvanized things in a way which the wimpy AIPAC and the wimpy Israeli government and the wimpy Jewish leaders would never have done. He stood up for us courageously, and he deserves a lot of credit. Thank you, Mensch. And we now go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, "I was at the pro-Israeli rally last Tuesday, July 22nd. Missing was my alleged Jewish mayor, Rahm Emanuel, and my Congress person or thing, whatever, I don't know, Congress person, Jan Schakowsky." I'll call her a Congress thing, Jan Schakowsky. Well, Chicago Jew, I think you already know that Rahm Emanuel and Jan Schakowsky are Jewish anti-Semites. They're self-hating Jews. They're Judenrat Kapo Obama Jews who hate their own people and who will do everything they can to hurt Israel, undermine Israel. They're ashamed to be Jewish. They're ashamed of the Jewish state. And they do everything they can to hurt Israel. This is the type of what I call Semitic fungus that you have in American politics. And this is why we should never vote. Never vote for the Jewish politician running. The Jewish politician running, they always stab Israel in the back. Outside of Israel, you don't vote for a Jewish politician outside of Israel. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to our great friend Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, "Reb Chaim, if Rabbi Kahana had succeeded implementing his program in Israel, could he have been Mashiach Ben Yosef? Thank you," unquote. Well, Mashiach Ben Yosef means the Messiah, the son of Joseph, because there are two messiahs in Judaism. There's Mashiach ben Yosef, Messiah, son of Yosef, of Joseph, and Moshiach ben David, the Messiah, the son of David, of David. Mashiach ben Yosef paves the way for Mashiach ben David. Could Rabbi Kahana have been Mashiach ben Yosef? I don't know. It's possible. If he had become prime minister, I do believe he could have paved the way, though, for the final redemption. I really believe that. And Kalman, I'm going to say something a lot bolder than that. I believe that we can pave the way for the coming of the Messiah, for the coming of the Mashiach, if we create an Israel that does what God says. I believe that in the 1967 Six-Day War and the recreation of Israel and the regathering of the exiles and all the fulfillment, the biblical prophecy that we've seen, the Mashiach, the Messiah, is knocking at the door if the Jews would just do the right thing. I really believe that. And if we create an Israel that does what God commands, I think we could pave the road. We could pave the road for eventually for the coming of the Mashiach, for the Messianic era. I think that could happen. Anyway, Kalman, great question. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, would getting into business and becoming rich be a better strategy to funding a political movement than fundraisers?" Unquote. There are people that have to do fundraisers, Maimonides, and there are people that have to do that. Should be in business and should be supporting us financially. We have to think like an army. In an army, you have people who are manning the tanks, and you have people who are manning, you have the pilots that man the jet fighters, people who man the missiles, you have the ground troops, the paratroopers, you've got all different types of division. You have the Navy. You have all different types of functions in an army. And if we're going to be an army to make this a better world, an army of idealists, because we're sort of like an army of idealists to make this a better world, everybody has their role to play. There are people that have to do fundraising and have to be fundraisers. There are people that have to spend their time like we do, you know, doing videos and reaching the people of Israel with our message and reaching as many people as we can with our advertising and having high-quality Facebook pages. There are people that have to do that. Because otherwise, what are we raising money for if we don't have the high quality information that we're bringing to the people? And there are people who have businesses, who become wealthy, and who should use a portion of their wealth to improve this world. Because, you know, in the end, for people who do become wealthy, and not just for people who become wealthy, God did not put you in this world to have a bigger and fancier car than you have now, or a bigger and fancier house than you have now, or even a bigger bank account than you have now. You're not going to take any of that with you. The physical things you have in this world, you will not take with you when you leave this world. The only things you will take with you are the spiritual things, the good things you've done. If you've done good things in this world, that you will take with you into the next world. And so, people should remember that our purpose in life is not just to make money and enrich ourselves and have luxury and have material goods. That's not the purpose of life. Materialistic things that we have are necessary for us to survive. You have to have a roof over your head. You have to have food. You have to be able to support yourself and your family. That you have to do. There's no question about that. That should be your priority. But fighting to make this a world in which you want your family to live and grow up in and your children to grow up in, that is not less important. That also has to be a part of our priority. And JTF gives people the opportunity to make a big difference. A big difference. If there are people who do become rich and can give us substantial support, that's wonderful. That's a role that people should play. And if there are other people who can do fundraisers or other people who know how to raise money and or who know how to help us on our Facebook pages or know how to help us in other areas, that's also wonderful. There are different tasks and different roles and different ways of helping, and everybody has to play the role to the best of their ability. Because the goal is to improve this world, and the goal is to make this a world that is worth living in. Thank you, Maimonides. And we now go to our great friend Selhar, who is also active on our Hebrew forum and in our Hebrew movement. Selhar writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you comment about Turkey's Erdogan's latest accusations against Israel? What would you tell the Israelis who got stuck in Turkey, unquote? Well, you know, I answered a question about him before, about him comparing Israel to Hitler, when his country is the country that has literally committed holocausts against the Armenians. They're committing a holocaust now against the Kurds. They committed the worst atrocities against the Serbs, against the Greeks. The Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Ottoman Empire, slaughtered, enslaved, and raped millions of Greeks and Serbs and other European people in the most brutal fashion. The chutzpah, the gall of this vicious Jew-hating serpent to mouth off against Israel. It's just, especially since Turkey was aligned with Germany in both world wars. The goal of him to mouth off against Israel just shows that people feel they can get away with these things because we don't have Israeli leaders that respond to them. Remember, Netanyahu got on his hands and knees and apologized to this monster. Remember when Netanyahu apologized to this monster? Turkey was trying through the Marmara, the flotilla, the Marmara, to smuggle goods in to help the Hamas terrorists in Gaza. And Israel boarded the ships and stopped the ships, and they violently attacked Israeli soldiers, and Israeli soldiers had to defend themselves. And in the end, Netanyahu apologized to Turkey when Turkey was committing a terrorist act. And not only that, he's offering to give the criminals who tried to help the Hamas terrorists, Israel wants to give them millions of dollars in compensation for what happened to them. compensation. Compensation. Anyone who comes in to assist terrorists should be killed. If someone comes to assist terrorist murderers, that makes them an accessory to murder. And in self-defense, they should be killed. And Israel's going to give them millions of dollars in compensation for doing this? So because we have Israeli leaders that behave like this, we're in this situation. As far as Israelis who get stuck in Turkey, I have no pity for them. I can't stand Jews that go to Jew-hating countries and give them tourist dollars and give them businesses and don't care and have no principles. If they want to go visit Turkey, too bad. I have no pity for them. I don't have anything to say to them. I don't have anything to say to people like that. Thank you, Tzelhar. And now we go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Is the CIA arming and training Hamas Fatah?" Unquote. Of course they are. They're training Fatah, and Fatah trains Hamas and helps Hamas, of course. Not only that, where is all the money coming from for these terrorist organizations? It comes from America and Israel. Let's not just blame America, Israel. The Netanyahu government gives them billions, has given them billions of dollars in aid. And the United States over the years has given billions of dollars in aid to these terrorists. So this is an example of we have leaders in the United States and Israel who are digging our graves, who are helping our murderers and digging our graves. Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, now writes, and I quote, "Discuss why the average Israeli does not want to survive," unquote. I don't think that's true. I think the average Israeli does want to survive. The average Israeli often does a lot of stupid things. There are many Israelis who are outright nuts, who are just crazy. But I think the average Israeli does want to survive. Lewinsky Stinks, let us become a mass movement. Let us become a mass movement, and we'll show everybody what the average Israeli is willing to support. I think you'll see us changing the average Israeli dramatically, drastically. If we become a mass movement, I assure you, you won't recognize the average Israeli anymore. If JTF, instead of having 23,000 members, has 100,000, 200,000, you won't recognize the average Israeli anymore, because we will start to change and move to the right and move toward Torah Judaism, all of Israel, God willing, or at least the same parts of Israel. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, and I quote, "I think most Americans are anti-Semites today," unquote. I think most people have anti-Semitic attitudes and feelings. I think that's true. I think most people have anti-Semitic attitudes for a whole variety of reasons. There are many, many reasons. It's nothing new. I also think there are tens of millions of evangelical Christians and other Americans who are not anti-Semitic, who support Israel. And those are the people, but they're a minority. Then tens of millions in a country of over 300 million Americans, they're a minority. Obviously, they're a minority. Barack Hussein Obama won majority votes in two presidential elections in a row, so obviously they're a minority. But that's who we have to work with. We have to work with that minority of Christians and other supporters of Israel and other people who understand what's going on. We have to work with them and wake them up and get them motivated and get them active. You know, even though the righteous Americans are a minority, just as the righteous Jews are a minority, the minority can prevail in the end. The minority can dictate the agenda and prevail. That can happen. It's happened many times before in history, and it can happen again. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we now go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Speak about the situation of Jews in France," unquote. I think Jews in France are crazy to live there. I understand they're living there for many, many years. I probably still have family in France. I had family in France. I had family in Paris. I don't know. We haven't been in touch many, many, many years. But I probably still have family in France. Why would they live in France when not only is it dangerous, not only can you get killed or attacked just walking down the street in France if you're Jewish, but even economically, even Jews who say, well, I want to make money, I have my business, the per capita income in Israel is higher than the per capita income in France. Why would Jews want to live in France? They could do better in Israel than in France, in every way. Spiritually, as far as their own security, as far as raising their families as Jewish families, for certain it's better in Israel, that's for sure. And even economically. Maybe in the short term, when you first move there, you have to adjust, you have to learn the language, you have to get a job. At first, you have to make some sacrifices. True. But overall, the Israeli economy is stronger than the French economy. The Israeli economy is actually pretty strong. The French economy is in terrible shape. So the hundreds of thousands of Jews in France should definitely leave. And definitely make Aliyah. LKZ now writes, "Do you have a backup FB page?" Unquote. Facebook page. People will know if, God forbid, something happened to our page. We would immediately start a new page. We do what these other three pages did that I spoke about in my opening. We'll immediately start a new page. And people will be able to access us through the new page. The other three groups had no problem starting a new page right away. If we start a page with a very similar name now, then we're dividing our activities. I don't know. I think if something, God forbid, ever happened, we could immediately start a new page. And I think we would get the vast majority of our old people would come back. I think they'd come back because we're offering them things that you don't get anywhere else on Facebook, and they've really gotten attached to us. They really like us. So I think the vast majority of our members would come back. And I think, in addition to that, I think there would be outrage, and I think we'd get many new members, which is what's happening with these other three pages that were taken down. In the meantime, I have two Chaim Ben Pesach pages that people can go to. So people will get in. All they have to do is type in Chaim Ben Pesach if something happens, and they'll be able to access us quickly. That we have our English page, which they can go to, which they'll be able to access quickly, and we'll put announcements in Hebrew on our English page. We put announcements in Hebrew on the two Chaim Ben Pesach pages, and we would start a brand new page. Would it be inconvenient for us? It would be inconvenient for us. It would not be the end of the world, though. It wouldn't be the end of the world. It would not be. It happened to us on YouTube. And we're strong. We got 10 times as many views on YouTube today as we had in 2007 when they took all of our accounts down on YouTube. They took all of our accounts down on YouTube. And at that time, there were some people who thought it was the end of the world. And I said, this is not the end of the world. We raised more money from people who were outraged when that happened. People became more active with us. And today, we have 10 times as many views on YouTube, on all of our different accounts, as we had then. LKZ now writes, and I quote, "How long will it take for Hamas to rebuild after this and attack again? How long will it take for them to rebuild after this and attack again?" Oh, it won't take long at all. Not at all. Now, they can easily rebuild the missiles that they're sending, and the missiles will become even more sophisticated and strike even further. And if we don't take care of the Hamas problem, eventually they are going to strike at Israel's airport. And that will shut Israel down. They're going to shut the state of Israel down eventually. This is the price we're going to pay for having this horrible government there. That even so-called right-wing Jews in America defend. I notice, by the way, right-wing Jews in America all defend Netanyahu. They defend him because they think Netanyahu, he's the one who's standing up. In Israel, that's not true. In Israel, right-wing Jews don't like Netanyahu. They can't stand him, I guess, because they know him. But in America, oh, they're all really, you know, they're all standing up for him. They all like him. He's putting Israel in a situation where the whole country is going to be crippled. God forbid. But that's where we're headed. If we don't solve this problem and don't get the millions of Arabs who hate Israel out of there, if we don't solve this problem, eventually they're going to cripple all of Israel. They're going to cripple the economy. They're going to shut down the airport. It'll be devastating. They'll shut down. They could shut down the seaports also. They could fire missiles at the seaports. No ships will come in. No planes will come in. The consequences for Israel's economy would be devastating. So we got to wake people up, and we got to, you know, all the pressure on the Israeli government now is from the left. If we become a mass movement, there'll be pressure on them from the right. We're already doing what we can with our 23,000 plus members to put pressure on them from the right, but we got to become bigger than that, a lot bigger, to counteract Obama and Kerry and all the other pressure. If they have enough pressure from the people and they see they're going to get voted out of office, that does catch the attention of politicians. That's the one thing politicians do care about. Thank you, LKZ. Great questions. And now we go to our great friend Russian Leo 777, who writes, and I quote, "What are the chances of Muslim Nazi civilians turning against Muslim Nazi Hamas?" Unquote. Well, you know, Muslim Nazis always turn against each other. They're always fighting each other. I think, though, that this latest conflict is going to bring more support for Hamas than ever before. Because Hamas is not going to be defeated. The Israeli government does not want to win. And is not even trying to win. They just want a ceasefire, and a ceasefire is automatically a victory for Hamas. Because if the mighty Israeli army couldn't defeat this ragtag group of terrorists, then the terrorists win. The terrorists are the winners in the eyes of the Arab world, the Muslim world. So Hamas is the winner. That's the result of these weak policies. Thank you, Russian Leo. And we now go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss Barack Hussein Obama's FAA temporary ban on flights to Israel, Ted Cruz's response against the decision, and Mike Bloomberg flying to Israel during the ban," unquote. EB, as usual, you read my mind. EB already knows what we're going to speak about before we even speak about it. EB is very, very perceptive. As we said earlier, the FAA ban was an attempt to cripple Israel's economy and pressure Israel. Ted Cruz, with his courageous response, because of his courageous response, I believe that's the reason why that FAA ban was lifted so quickly. Because Ted Cruz right away started saying, "You are beginning an economic boycott of Israel. You're part of the economic boycott of Israel." That really threw the Obama administration on the defensive. And then Ted Cruz said he's going to hold up all the State Department appointees. And he demands an investigation into why they're trying to cripple Israel and why they're trying to destroy Israel's economy. Why they're trying to destroy Israel's economy. And so I believe Ted Cruz deserves credit for the lifting of this ban. And again, it shows his courage. And it shows why he should be president. He deserves to be the next president. Mike Bloomberg is such a fake, phony fraud. There's not an ounce of authenticity in anything this fake, phony pig does. He flew to Israel during the ban, yeah. And then screamed at that CNN anti-Semite Wolf Blitzer. Did you see the scene where he screams at Wolf Blitzer saying, "I'm offended that you say this against the State Department"? Wolf Blitzer said, "Do you think there's a political motivation behind the ban on flights to Israel?" Of course there's a political motivation, obviously. Bloomberg says, "I, as an American, am offended by this, that you would suggest that our State Department would have a political motivation." Oh, the Obama administration and the State Department and John Kerry would... they would never have a political motivation. It wouldn't be because they're biased against Israel. How dare you? How offensive. Obama and Kerry biased against Israel? How dare you even suggest such a thing? And by the way, Wolf Blitzer supports Obama. He's a self-hating Jew who wrote a whole book against Jonathan Pollard. He's a self-hating, Judenrat piece of garbage. But he felt he had to ask the question because it's so obvious what Obama and Kerry were trying to do to Israel. And Bloomberg right away comes to their defense. Of course, Bloomberg naturally supported Obama. Bloomberg supported Obama. Bloomberg said that Arafat, maybe Yasser Arafat was a terrorist. He's not sure if Yasser Arafat, who murdered thousands of Jewish men, women, and children, he's not sure if Yasser Arafat was a terrorist. That's Mike Bloomberg. Such a self-hating, intermarried, assimilated, multi-billionaire fraud. Just a low, evil embarrassment to the Jewish people. The lowest. Everything he does hurts Jews. Every issue that he takes positions on, whether it's gay marriage, which he supports, or destroying the Second Amendment, which he supports, he says he's going to outspend the NRA to destroy the Second Amendment. Or fighting for amnesty, which he supports, so that America could become a third world banana republic and all the third world people could become the majority in America. Then America would forever, forever be hopelessly anti-Israel. That's what Bloomberg wants to create. On every issue, all he does is work against the best interests of America and the best interests of his own people, the Jewish people. Thank you, EB. And we now go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "How differently would the opposition handle the latest conflict? Better, worse, or same?" Unquote. Great question. If the Labor Party, the left-wing Labor Party, were in power, how would they handle it? I think it would be about the same. I think they'd be doing the same thing. And we know they'd be doing the same thing because Ehud Olmert and Tzipi Livni, on the left, they did launch a similar operation into Gaza, and they did the same thing. The same basic thing. Hamas now is attacking much more extensively than they were then. But Bibi is reacting the same way that they reacted. Tying the hands of Israeli soldiers so that dozens of Israeli soldiers are being unnecessarily murdered. Worrying about Hamas civilians, the Hamas terrorist-loving civilians there. The same exact behavior. Nothing has changed. So I don't think there'd be much of a change in the end, except the one thing that's even worse about Netanyahu. When Netanyahu does it, people think, "Oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad because Netanyahu is the Likud. He's not a leftist. He's with the Likud." So in that way, it's even worse. He doesn't get criticized for doing the terrible things that he's doing. Whereas if it was a left-wing government like Ehud Olmert or Ehud Barak, if it was them, or Tzipi Livni, if it was one of them doing this, everyone in Israel would be screaming and yelling, you appeasers, you're surrendering. They'd be screaming and yelling. The Likud people would be the first ones screaming and yelling at them. So there'd be opposition to that, and they would be under pressure to take more action. So in that respect, the Likud and Bibi are even worse. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And we now go to the great Baltimore. And the great Baltimore writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Herzl and his book, The Jewish State?" I think that Theodor Herzl was not a good Jew. He converted to Christianity. He wanted the whole Jewish people to convert. And when I say Christianity, I mean Catholicism. He offered the Pope a plan where the whole Jewish people would convert to Catholicism to try to solve the problem of anti-Semitism. After he wrote the Jewish state, he said the Jewish state, he said, well, you know, why don't we just have a Jewish state in Uganda in the middle of Africa and forget about where God commands us to have a Jewish state in the Holy Land. Forget about the Holy Land. We don't need the Holy Land. Let's just go move to Uganda. Let's convince the British, who controlled Uganda at that time, let's convince them to give us a Jewish state in Uganda in the middle of Africa. The things he did were terrible. He made the so-called Zionist movement an anti-religious socialist movement because he was socialist and because he was anti-religious. And so he was an assimilationist. And so he turned the so-called Zionist movement into an assimilationist, socialist, left-wing, appeasing movement. If religious Jews had taken control of the Zionist movement, if good nationalist Jews and religious Jews had taken control, what a different world this would have been. But unfortunately, Herzl and people like him took control, and we're paying the price for it to this very day. We have a Jewish state because God miraculously gave us a Jewish state despite these terrible leaders. But imagine how good it would be, how wonderful, what paradise we would have if we had good leaders. If instead of these terrible leaders, we had good leaders. Thank you, Baltimore. And we now go to the great Mishmat, who writes, and I quote, what is your perspective on the death of Eric Garner? Thank you and God bless you, Chaim, unquote. I don't know enough about the facts of what happened with Eric Garner, but I do know that his wife running to Al Sharpton, to the white hater, the Jew hater, the cop hater, Al Sharpton, that certainly tells me something about his family. I'm not going to be on the same side of an issue as Al Sharpton. If his family runs right away to Al Sharpton and makes Al Sharpton their defender, that turns me off right away, because Al Sharpton has blood on his hands. And the blood of Jews who were murdered, of the Jew who was murdered in the Crown Heights pogrom, and of other Jews whose lives were put in danger by Al Sharpton over the years, and of the six employees of a Jewish-owned store in Harlem who were murdered by one of Al Sharpton's demonstrators, to me, their blood is not any less valuable than the blood of Eric Garner. So I don't know anything about Eric Garner's death. I don't know the circumstances of it. But I'm certainly turned off by the fact that his family decided that Al Sharpton is going to be their defender. Thank you, Mishmat. And I want to thank everybody for another program that we very much enjoyed doing. Until next week, Shalom.